You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of October 13th, 2023. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we love to host listeners from far and wide.
It is the Professional Left with Driftgus and Blugal.
Yeah, in this last week, we had a lovely time visiting with three different groups of listeners who stopped by to chat. One was from down the block, almost literally. One is from across the country. And one was all the way from England. And it was delightful. We had a ball. That was, in fact, Andy from England, you heard during our introduction over the din of a restaurant here in Springfield. We talked a lot about science fiction and politics with other friends. And I was somewhat intimidated because they were pulling things out that I hadn't read or hadn't read in a long time, or their depth of knowledge was astonishing.
It's very rare for me to sit there and realize we're with a couple that knows much more and is much more ingrained in the science fiction world than Driftglass is.
Yeah.
We learned a lot from them, right?
When you drop an E.E. Doc Smith cut into the conversation, which I have read, but I'm like, damn, I thought I was the only other person on Earth who still read or knew about E.E. Doc Smith. You know you're having a good time.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And then the local
people were hilarious and fun to talk to.
Oh, they were all.
And we learned a lot from the wife in that couple is very passionate about waste reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And we will never, I don't think, bring home a box of food from the restaurant again. She brought her own Tupperware.
Yeah.
So that she could take home food and not have a piece of styrofoam in her car.
Yep.
And what a great idea, you know, and such a small thing to do. And she had lots of other ideas about native plants, and she's very, you know, ecologically minded. And then her husband was born in Burlington, Iowa.
Yeah. Approximately the same place and time as my sister. In this town that I visited 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, small world.
It's like, really? We're doing, okay, I get it. I don't know what the sign means, but something, the universe is telling me something. It was wild. And he had lived a great life of adventure, librarying, which was very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah, and anyway, Andy from England is just fabulous. I mean, we've been friends with him via email and all kinds of other messaging things for literally years.
Yeah.
Literally years. And
watch his niece grow up.
Yeah. We did. His niece Flo was one of the early internet kitties. She had kitties on her pajamas.
Uh-huh.
If you've listened to us for that long and remember the baby Flo on our internet kitty, she's 13 now because
she's now running for PM in England.
She could. We had a great time with Andy. You and Andy really hit it off. And we asked him about, this was so funny, we asked him about the depiction of British people on American television.
Uh-huh.
And his first reaction to that was Wilfred Hyde White on Columbo. And I said, oh, here's your brother from another mother, Driftglass.
Oh, my God.
Columbo is the first thing you think of? My goodness.
Your first go-to is Columbo. I'm like, okay, we're going to have to sit down and have a longer conversation about many things. We solved the world's problems, as we always did with everyone else we sat with.
Yep.
And we just ran out of time, but it was wonderful, and they were wonderful people. And
allow us to extend an invitation to anyone who's from anywhere around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Who is coming to Illinois and has time to swing through Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the Amtrak route between Chicago and St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And we would love to have coffee or lunch or breakfast or whatever it is that you'd like to sit down and have a chat with us. Just shoot the breeze. We had a wonderful time with all three of three in 1 week was a lot.
Yeah.
Usually we have one every 3 months or more or less.
And the only advice I give you to anyone visiting us is lower your expectations.
Well, Andy came down from Chicago and we told him, he said, so how many days should I plan for Springfield? Like, one and a half.
Yeah, one and a half.
You'll see everything.
We'll show you the things. We'll do the things. But it was great. It was great.
It was great. Lovely. And we had a lovely meal with him and a good time. Really good time.
Yeah.
And then, so you're invited. That's what I wanted to say, everybody. You're invited. Come visit. I sent out some feelers today on the, 7,000 social media accounts that we in the biz are forced to have at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
To Blue Sky and Spoutable and yes, Twitter also, to find out what people wanted to hear about this week.
Yep.
One listener replied, I know it's going to be tough, but Israel.
Yeah.
And I think many of you know that's sort of outside the framework of what we usually talk about. We usually don't talk about international things. We certainly don't talk about international global conflict very much. But that's all that's been in the news this week. And I think it's very important to say what trauma this has been for the whole world, for all of us out here, not there, seeing this from afar, that this is just one more traumatic thing that since the Iraq war and the election of Trump and COVID and, it's just another traumatic, soul-crushing thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I also agree with Rebecca at Wonkette, who begged her readers and supporters, quote, take a minute to ask whether your right to vent your smug opinion is in fact the most important thing about this moment.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
And just, fingers to your lips and pray for peace.
Mm-hmm.
Pray for safety, pray for justice, pray for all of the good things. But Rebecca at Wonkette also noted how corrupt Bibi Netanyahu is.
And he is.
Rebecca is, she says, somewhat Jewish, not really that Jewish, but Jewish.
Uh-huh.
If Bibi Netanyahu had any shame, he would be ashamed of the intelligence failure. Plus the fact that people around the world asked credibly, if this is his wag the dog creation. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying, hey, Bibi, that's your reputation. And a not insignificant portion of the world thinks you're capable of blowing up your own people, just like you did the judiciary of your country.
Mm-hmm.
To hold on to power.
Mm-hmm.
Eat your heart out, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm very glad at this moment that Joseph Robinette Biden is president of the United States. Really,
people in Israel are also very relieved that Joe Biden is president.
Yeah, who really has, and let's all stipulate all the things we have of reservations about Joe Biden and his priors and all the other things. Got it. Check. You're right. I'll check 90% of those boxes. He has been around this game for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
He has known everybody. He knows all the players. He's met with them for years. He knows everyone involved. He knows how to make those phone calls to world leaders to get people to stand down and calm down and let's let cooler heads prevail. And let's also not pretend this didn't happen.
Right.
Or that it's somehow, justified. Anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, there was a whole bunch of the usual, like, Tim Scott, who was supposed to be the dead center, God-loving Republican, who was
reasonable Republican.
Yeah, loves Jesus, loves his imaginary girlfriend, loves them all. Joe Biden has blood on his hands.
Oh, come on.
This kind of despicable shit from the right. But there was this hue and cry about why isn't Biden doing more? Why isn't he giving blah, blah, blah? Well, he did all the things. He did all those things, and it didn't shut up the criticism because it never shuts up. But he made an unequivocal stand. He gave a really powerful speech or two. And I am very glad he's president right now.
Yep. And shame on our own shameless Republicans in Congress. I mean, they're still blocking military promotions. And the appointment of an ambassador to Israel is
Why?
Blocked.
Why?
Why? Why? Because blocking Democratic presidents is all they know how to do. It's a habit. It's their goal in life. And I'm sorry. I wish I had more to say than that. I wish I could tell you now at this point, as I have in the past, told you, you know, be kind to yourselves, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is traumatic. I don't think that's going to cut it in this episode.
No.
This is a horror show.
It is. It really is.
And we're going to have to, and I'm going to have to, about this issue and this attack, I'm going to have to shut up right now and just ponder humanity in ways that are really not comfortable for me at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
The thing that I do when I'm feeling despair is look for one way to make the world a better place.
Yep.
You know, what can I do today to make the world a better place? I'm working on a blanket that's going to go to a stranger. I have a conduit at church through which I can give my craft work, and this blanket will go to someone, and I don't know whether it'll be a foster home child or a nursing home patient or a, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. It's someone who's needy.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go to someone who's needy.
Yeah.
And that is something that here in the middle of middle America with no political connections, I can do that.
Yeah.
I can give to UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees. I can give $5.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's my limit. That's what I can afford before I start cutting into my medical bills. No.
Well, you know, and there were a bunch of threats against Muslims several years ago.
Yes.
Right. Muslim mosques and attacks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And in Springfield, the interfaith community all bundled us all up to go off to the local mosque, to stand in solidarity with them, to sit through a service, to have the leaders of every faith in town practically stand up and give speech. Because this is a funeral, and it's a crime scene, and it's a war, and it's an atrocity all at once, and it's ongoing. This is not over by a damn sight. And we, with our little voice out here in the middle of middle America, the best I know how to do is say, you know, how can I help? How can I be of service? What can I do to make the world a little bit better so that this sort of thing doesn't happen? How do I not turn to stone and just give up on humanity and turn my eyes and say, you know what? This is just the world we live in now. Yeah. I don't know the answers to those. I know that the questions are important.
The interfaith community in Springfield is tight.
Yeah.
In large part, I think, because the rabbis in town are really interested in pursuing that.
Yeah.
I the first time I went to the church that you and I attend now was 2008, an interfaith service where the rabbis in town were there, Catholic nuns were there, and the leaders of the Islamic community were there, and the black churches were there. And it was to commemorate, not to celebrate, but to commemorate the 5th anniversary of the Iraq War. And I was really impressed with the fact that everyone got a chance to speak, that they were all on the same page about praying for peace. The Catholic bishop was not there.
No. You mean?
We have an outlier, folks, here in town.
Bishop Poprocky.
He's a little mashugi.
Yeah. To coin a phrase, yes, he really is.
He's just a little mashugi. But everybody else was there, you know. And so find a way to make the world a better place. It can be small. It's okay.
Yeah.
We have to chip away at evil as we can. And hate and despair. I mean, the enemy is despair. In all of this.
Well, yeah, the enemy is believing that this is the status quo and it can't be changed and nothing can alter this horrible spiral we're in. So we might as well just cash in or give up.
Well, we were talking with Andy from England about Ireland, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And what is Belfast like today? It's a bustling city.
Yeah. Yep.
Nobody checks under the cars for bombs anymore because
They found a way to fix that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brexit came along.
Well,
and Andy did type when I put out the thing on Twitter about what do you guys want us to talk about? And Andy wrote and said, is it too late to ask for an hour on Brexit?
Yeah, it's about
yes, it is.
It's about 6 years too late, Andy.
Six years and 20 years too early. Andy says it's going to take at least 20 years to undo Brexit.
I firmly believe that. Now, I would like to mention that we actually, in the spirit of, we read everybody's mail. It comes in the door. It comes over the transom. It comes in email. We read all of our letters, including the angry letters from people who kind of get pissed off at things that we say and do that don't please them. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm going to go right on doing the things that don't please them or please me. I will learn from my mistakes. I promise to do that. But I got chided, and my dear wife answered in a very loving tone, going, "You're right. We did this," and got a really snap back, harsh letter. This thing that you and I do, Blue Gal, about saying we've always been right about every single thing ever since the beginning of time.
Yeah, that's not what we said,
and we were wrong. Hillary Clinton was not elected in 2016.
Yeah.
And we got letters saying,
we were confident all through 2016 that Hillary would win. We were.
And as were a whole bunch of people. Mm-hmm. But and we got, you know, a comment saying, "So I guess you don't know everything, do you?
Yeah.
How come you're talking about remembering
stuff? You weren't
right
about everything for 20 years. Yeah.
You don't want to remember that, do you?" Like, well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, fair point. That's great. But here's the other side of that. We worked really hard to get her elected.
Yes, we did.
We worked hard because we were a split household. Half his household wanted Bernie. Half his household wanted Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And when both of those people lost, we got behind Hillary Clinton. And I'd like to point out that, do you know who the winningest team in baseball ever is, Blue Gal?
No.
It won't surprise you.
I absolutely don't.
Well, this is the Keith Olbermann portion of the show. I'm talking about baseball cards and who I knew in the 1960s. In 1927, it was the New York Yankees. They hold the world's record. Their record during that season was 110 wins and 44 losses. But they lost 44 times. Bunch of losers. Because you know what? They weren't perfect. And the New York Yankees in the 38 or 39, that's actually the number two winningest group, also lost 45 games. Also, next some losers. The Cubs in 1906 had a record of 116-36, which is the best winning percentage in the game, but they lost in the postseason, so that brought them down a little bit. Again, they lost 36 games because they're not perfect. We do not claim to be perfect. What we do claim is that we have an understanding of politics and an understanding of the trajectory the Republican Party is on that is absolutely better in every fucking respect than the mainstream media and has been for decades, as virtually every liberal blogger also has.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not just us.
And during 2016, we were hopeful and we worked hard. And we remember now that Hillary Clinton lost by like 70,000 votes in three states. Mm-hmm. Those votes were sopped up by Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. And if you'd like to relitigate 2016, I'm happy to do so. I don't particularly want to, but I do remember that while we were begging people to vote Democrats, Susan Sarandon and Glenn Greenwald and Evan McMullen and Matthew Dowd and Bill Kristol and David French and Maureen Dowd and Eddie Glaude Jr. and the front page editors of the New York Times and on and on and on and on were like, you know, just don't throw your vote away on these two corrupt people. Vote third party. Vote for Evan McMullen. Vote for David French. Write in Ronald Reagan. Whatever you do, don't encourage these two corrupt people.
The corrupt duopoly is what it is.
Corrupt duopoly was the phrase that pays, and disruption. Mm-hmm. We disrupt the corrupt duopoly. And Eddie Glaude Jr. stands out in my mind because he was in Time magazine saying, "I'm not voting for either of these people. I'm voting for Hillary. You know, this is a corrupt system." Day after Trump wins, "White people let me down. How can white people do this?" And you know what? For his sins, he was punished by everyone forgetting he ever said that and getting a permanent gig on Morning Joe. So what we were doing at the time, I lost my deep and longstanding friendship with Matthew Dowd over this.
Not.
Because I would go on the only means of communication that we have with these people, which is social media, and say, "You're wrong, you're wrong. Both-siderism is going to kill this. It's going to kill this country. You're fucking things up. You're losing it. And if you going out there and declaring that both of them are awful from your perch as the ABC News chief political correspondent, chief analyst, the expert guy, that Hillary and Trump, both bad, both equally bad. You know, don't waste your vote. Vote third party. You are doing enormous damage to this country because you're making it possible that Trump might win. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to hear that. They didn't want to listen to it. And Matthew Dowd, once the shit hit the fan and once it turned out Trump was as bad as Trump was going to be, Matthew Dowd deleted all those tweets, deleted all that social media, lied about it, pretended it never happened, and moved on. I do make mistakes. We did make a mistake. And we had an emergency podcast the next day.
The day after, to about mourn how heartbroken and panic we were. And cry. And yeah. But
we do not have access to a crystal ball. What we can do is read the newspaper, watch the news, compare it against the real world as we know it and see it, and describe the difference. And the difference is huge. And the problem is it's continuing to be huge. The big both-siderist goofs and nuts and contrarians and bomb throwers from 2016 all are doing fine.
Peter Baker is still on MSNBC every evening.
Yep. And Maureen Dowd still has her job because Maureen Dowd said, you know, Donald Trump.
There's a club, Driftglass.
Yep. There is a club. So we do the best we can with what we have. And that's all you're ever going to get from us, but you will always get that from us.
And we do read your letters. Brett Banditelli on Blue Sky suggested that there is no one cooler in America right now than UAW President Sean Fain, possibly the world. He wore an Eat the Rich t-shirt at his live stream on Monday.
God bless him.
And when Ford came to a meeting without a financial counteroffer, Fain said, "You just lost Kentucky Truck," which went out on strike. Mm-hmm. And that's their most profitable factory. Which means lack of preparation is now costing Ford $48,000 a minute in revenue.
Yeah.
Not profit. Revenue.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Go unions.
Yep.
It's got to hurt their stock price.
Yeah.
Because the CEOs do not care about anything else.
Right. And that's painfully obvious.
Sean Fain knows that. He knows they don't care about their workers. He knows they don't care about worker benefits. They're trying to get out of this with as little money as possible to people.
Uh-huh.
And they won representation for electric battery factories.
Mm-hmm.
So the strike is working. And Sean Fain, what a name.
Yeah.
There's going to be many boys in America named Sean or Fain. In the next 2 years, I guarantee you.
Yeah, well, you know, the more the better.
Right.
Now, I am currently working, this is a work in progress, I warn you, on a post entitled, "In This Taylorville Diner." because you and I got a bunch of emails and suggestions and look at this crap from trusted listeners and readers about a long Washington Post article about gerrymandering.
Oh, and Hal Sparks talked about this and wants to have us on, I'm sure. He keeps saying.
Well, you know, we're very
busy.
Hi, Hal.
We're right here.
Right here. Right here, Hal. And guess where the Washington Post went to hear all about gerrymandering? Here's the headline. And just let yourself sit with this headline for a moment.
Okay.
Illinois Democrats drew new maps. The changes pushed the GOP to the right.
Oh, fuck you.
Yes.
Wait,
it's
no.
Our fault. It's our fault. The GOP in Illinois is crazy because we drew new maps.
We Democrats pushed the Republican Party to the right with our maps.
Naughty bad. And then it goes on. The state's congressional redistricting illustrates how gerrymandering hollows out the political center and strengthens the fringe, experts say.
Well, why didn't they go to Alabama where they're actually trying to override the Supreme Court? To keep blacks from being represented, because then they'd have to go to Alabama.
Right. We don't go to Alabama. You know, Chicago. We can go to Chicago and then cruise down to
Taylorville.
Yeah,
we'll fly to Chicago. And we'll go down to where? Did they actually go to Taylorville?
Oh, yeah. No,
Taylorville's a white flight community. What's wrong with them?
I tried to hold myself, you know, innocent, like a writer. I got my writer's brain and said, okay, pretend you don't know anything about this subject or Illinois or Taylorville or anything. This article's headline screams to me that Illinois specifically must have a very real and distinctive Illinois problem. Mm-hmm. Warrant them dispatching the Washington Post's, quote, senior correspondent covering national and international affairs, Kevin Sullivan, and Clara N.C. Morse, who is a something called a data intern, all the way from Washington, D.C. to the continental interior where we live, in this Taylorville diner. And where do they go and who do they talk to to get the real inside dope on gerrymandering? Well, you know what? They don't skimp. They tell you about it in the first two paragraphs. Dateline, Taylorville, Illinois. Quote,
Taylorville is a white flight community outside Springfield, everybody.
Yes.
White flight.
Quote, and this really isn't New York Times pitch bot. This is the actual article.
Yep.
On a warm Friday night in the St. Mary's Catholic Church parking lot, sweating men sipped cold beers, dipped fish fillets into bubbling deep fryers as children played on a bouncy castle. Yep. This down-home fish fry used to be a regular stop for U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a moderate Republican who grew up in this former coal town in central Illinois. But that was before, new district lines drawn in 2021 pushed him into far more conservative terrain and into competition with a fellow GOP incumbent, unquote. Oh, no.
Nazi Mary Miller is who he had to run against.
And,
yes.
And she kicked his ass. Now.
Yeah.
Okay. So, my God, Democrats drawing these lines around, that's pretty bad. Why? Is there some solution to this problem, Blue Gal? Well, now, if you count with me, if you use your fingers and toes of you and your best friend, literally 41 paragraphs later comes this paragraph. The parties have different stances on how to address gerrymandering. Democrats have pushed for federal regulation that would require that maps be drawn by independent commissions. Republicans have largely resisted those calls, unquote.
Largely resisted? They blocked it every time.
Yes, they did. And they do. And you know what? There is a solution to this problem. And Democrats are perfectly willing to fix the problem.
End gerrymandering across the country, but we're not going to unilaterally disarm.
See, we've tried that. We'll be the good guys. We'll be the adults in the rooms. We'll fix our side and you'll follow suit because you're adults, right? No, that isn't how anything works anymore. And and what you need to bring to this article is a fantasy about the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They're like both political parties. They're kind of kooky. They're both, you know, fringy. And the reason they're both fringy is gerrymandering. Or instead, come to this article with this: the Republican Party has been on a trajectory towards disaster for decades.
Right.
The Republican Party, as it exists today, Rodney Davis's GOP, is an existential threat to democracy. Any legal means to stop them from acquiring and holding power should at this point be acceptable. This is the break glass time. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If gerrymandering keeps the Republican Party from owning the House, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once the Republican Party is burned to the fucking ground and normal people start running for office in that party again, then we'll talk. But we are not ever going to unilaterally disarm again because Republicans just take that as an opportunity to reload. The article is amazingly slanted. Mm-hmm. The only actual Illinois human beings they talk to are Rodney Davis, a supporter of Rodney Davis, the nonpartisan quote-unquote mayor of Taylorville, who's still registered as a Democrat. But you know what Democrats are like in Taylorville? They look a lot like Republicans.
Yeah.
Some psychos in the adjacent district who feel cheated that they couldn't still vote for far-right conspiracy flick Mary Miller. And someone from Adam Kinzinger's new PAC, which I believe is called I Was Redistricted Out of Office and All I Got Was This Lousy Cable News Gig.
Yeah,
that's who they talk to. Now, if you dig deeper into the article, the writers do bother to mention that, you know, Texas is pretty fucking awful and that more Republican states are gerrymandered to an inches of their lives than Democratic states.
Yes.
And that Republicans are willing to buck the Supreme Court to keep black people from voting.
Do they mention that? Do they mention Alabama?
No, they don't mention Alabama. They do mention that gerrymandering was also given a huge boost in 2019 by the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled 5-4 that partisan redistricting is a political question that must be decided by legislators, not federal courts. They didn't bother to mention that the 5-vote majority was all appointed from one fucking party. Guess which party? It wasn't the Illinois Democratic Party, I'll tell you that. They also grab hold of the Overton window with both hands and drag it far enough so they could write about Rodney Davis as, you know, a moderate, which is only
true. He only voted 60 times to take away my health insurance.
It was a mere 60 times, Blue Gal. and you know, Rodney Davis is a moderate only when you compare him to the absolute lunatics that the Republican parties are electing now.
Yes, I will give you that. Moderate. Compared to Mary Miller, Rodney Davis is a moderate.
Right. Which is the problem, because the Republican Party keeps ratcheting further and further into crazy town, and the center keeps moving to remain halfway between Mary Miller and, I don't know, J.B. Pritzker.
Right.
And on that scale, yeah, Rodney Davis looks fairly moderate, except he's not. On an absolute scale, he's far, far, far to the right, but the rest of the party is in the fucking ultraviolet, so you're like, oh, well, I guess if we're going to be centrists, we have to be sorry for Rodney Davis. It's also just like corn in poop, shot through with all the usual both-siderisms that Rodney Davis loves so deeply. This is a quote from Rodney Davis. You have people in Congress in both parties who are rewarded for not working with the other side, unquote. Really?
Really.
You see, because we have a thing called no fair remembering stuff, we remember 2 whole weeks ago.
I think 2 weekends ago, I remember Democrats working with Republicans to keep the government open, Driftglass.
They did. They handed Kevin McCarthy a lifeline to save his job and kept the government open when Rodney Davis's party was trying to shut it down. Then Kevin McCarthy stabbed Democrats in the back. That was Republicans doing Republican shit. Now, Davis was Trump's House leader, whipping those votes on trying to take health care away from our family and millions of other Americans by repealing the ACA, and he voted to get rid of the ACA over and over and over again. You said, what, 60 times?
60 times at least. Yep.
And he made my wife cry.
He was at the beer blast in the Rose Garden when the House passed repealing Obamacare.
Yep.
And Trump held a beer party in the Rose Garden. Rodney
was just smiling. Rodney also got all hacked off at having to, you know, go through metal detectors Capitol because apparently he likes to walk around a little man with a big gun. I don't know. Maybe that makes him feel better. If you're a wimp from Taylorville, you know, you got to.
Well, I want to know the last time he was at a Taylorville fish fry, because when he ran against Mary Miller in the primaries and before that, the 2 years before that, people begged him to do a town hall and he wouldn't do it. He didn't want, you know, healthcare advocates coming and reminding everybody how he voted.
No, that would be bad. And he had won an election with 1 or 2 or 3 town hall meetings or debates against Betsy Dirksen Lonergan.
Yeah.
And we had knocked doors for her for 2 elections in a row. Yep. She'd come close and then had fallen even further the second time around.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy that Rodney Davis isn't my congressman anymore. If that makes me a bad person.
We have a Democratic congresswoman now. Mm-hmm. Nikki Budzinski is our congresswoman. Yep.
Now, during Trump's presidency, Rodney Davis voted in line with Trump's positions nearly 90% of the time. He voted for the House resolution in 2014, which resulted in the government shutting down. He voted for the Trump tax scam in 2017. He also voted against both articles of impeachment against Trump. Now, in November of 2021, Rodney Davis voted against censuring his good friend Paul Gosar.
Jesus.
Who was the Republican shitbag who had shared an animated video of himself killing a former member of Congress, I'm sorry, fellow member of Congress, and assaulting the President of the United States. When a majority of the House voted to censure Gosar, Davis went out of his way to criticize Nancy Pelosi, saying that she had torn the fabric of this house apart. Why does she need to be so
Paul Gosar didn't do that by threatening the life of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in a cartoon.
No. But, and the funniest and to me the most telling part of this article, the sort of like, you got to understand the psychosis of the right. The sort of in their brain, it's always the Democrats' fault. There was an interview with a Mary Miller supporter who is no longer in her district. He's very sad because she got districted away from him. And it was His name is Jack Turner, and he's the mayor of Oakland, Illinois. And he said her extreme wingnut politics represented Oakland really well. And, quote, that was taken away from us, and I think that's unfair, unquote. So he knew this crackpot. He liked this crackpot.
He liked having Mary crackpot. Miller as his congresswoman. Yeah, redistricting took her away from us. Yeah.
And yet he turns around and says this, quote, now you're either way left or way right. There used to be a middle road, and the middle road was fine. Why does it have to be this extreme, unquote.
Oh, my God. But he misses Nazi Mary Miller as his congresswoman?
Dude, it's extreme because of people like you.
Yeah.
Because of people like you. You want her up on that wall. You need her on that wall. And you feel cheated she's not up on that wall. But wonder why. What happened to everybody?
Why is everybody so extreme on both sides, Driftglass?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's always got to be the Democrats who are the adults, Blue Cow. It's Republicans who get to shit the bed. And Democrats' job is to clean it up. That's nature's order of things.
The order of things, yes.
And when that order is disrupted, Mayor Jack Turner does not understand why he's been cheated of his vote. Now, the things the article doesn't talk about is the wider context of the Republican Party in America today. For example, in Wyoming, Liz Cheney's state, there is no gerrymandering because there's only one goddamn congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wasn't gerrymandered out of office. The Republican Party of Wyoming got rid of her and replaced her with Harriet Hageman, who's a lunatic, who's not right.
She carried a lasso to the vote yesterday.
Yeah, because
she's the one. And she is a complete nut job.
Yeah. Now, if you look like at our statewide politics here, who ran against J.B. Pritzker in the last election?
Darren Bailey.
It was not a reasonable centrist Republican Rodney Davis type. It was Darren fucking Bailey. The Republican Party nominated him. The Republican Party tried to elect him, and he was terrible. We had a Republican governor in office before J.B. Pritzker. He was terrible. We went
without a state budget for 2.5 years to bust the state unions, the employees union in the state.
Our senator, the senior senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin, is boring as fuck. He's as centrist as they get.
He's from downstate. He's not some big Chicago politician.
No, he's from Rodney Davis's old district.
Yeah.
And he's like warm skim milk. You know, he's not nearly as lefty as anybody's happy with. But
he's an administrator. We were talking about that in a recent podcast about how there are people who are not policy rock stars, but they're about administering the Senate and the House to make sure the bills have the right amount of money attached to them or go through the right committee. That's Dick Durbin.
Right.
He does that kind of day-to-day operational stuff.
And our other senator, Tammy Duckworth, who is not a bomb-throwing lefty anything. I wish she's great.
She's a passionate war vet.
Uh-huh.
And I would call her progressive. I would.
Absolutely.
But she's not a bomb thrower. No, she's not.
She's not the liberal or the lefty equivalent of Mary Miller, because there is no lefty equivalent
to
Mary Miller.
There is no lefty equivalent of Mary Miller.
And now, if you just look at the Sangamon County Republican Party, Sangamon County was Rodney Davis's, mostly his district, and this is the baseline Republican Party. These are the people who get elected around here. These are people we know. And when they bring in featured speakers for their most important day of the year, the Lincoln Day celebration, where they raise a ton of money for candidates.
Yeah, it's their chicken dinner for fundraising.
Right.
Right.
Who do they bring in to appeal to the Republican donors and the Republican base and the people who give Republican parties money, Republicans who are all around us today? They do not bring in people who will stand up and quote Edmund Burke. They're not bringing in George Will. Who do they bring in? They bring in Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk and Corey Lewandowski and Laura Ingraham and Kellyanne Conway, because they know, they're not stupid. They know that those are the lunatics and the scumbags that local Republicans love. So please do not give me any bullshit about Democrats rechanging the maps in Illinois. It's what drove the Republican Party into the arms of Donald Trump or whatever. That's bullshit.
No, that's bullshit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of both sides, Driftglass, I have a question for you.
Sure.
we got a fundraising letter this week. I'm not going to read it on the air because most of our listeners probably got it too.
Well, we don't get paid to read fundraising letters either.
No, so. We don't. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, and I did read it to you.
Yes.
You know, sitting on the sofa.
DCCC.
I wanted to read it to you just as an exercise in, you know, how workshopped had this letter been?
Oh,
and as a writerly exercise, you and I went through it.
Uh-huh.
And extreme MAGA Republicans is mentioned about 6 times.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And our party and our power and our group and, you know, we want to work for the American people, et cetera.
American people. Mm-hmm.
It's been very carefully, you know, and you put a 3-page letter in a fundraising thing like that because apparently that works. Longer letters get more money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm old enough to remember when liberals didn't give a dime to the DCCC.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they were going to put Blue Dog war pimps in the House. People
That's
who
right.
would vote for war funding with George W. Bush. And I mean, times have changed. And, you know, I saw Hakeem Jeffries' picture on the envelope, and it's like looking at a puppy.
Aw.
I kind of want to have Hakeem Jeffries become speaker.
I kind of do.
And one of the, there is a list of candidates and a map and all kinds of strategy stuff in this envelope as well, with 27 House members that they are definitely defending the seats of these House members. That if you give money to the DCCC, we're going to make sure these 27 House members in particular have their seats defended. And we're also looking to expand, especially into upstate New York, you know, the places that you expect that they're going to try to flip seats.
Right.
Flip districts, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And one of the 27 on the list is Illinois 13, Nikki Budzinski, our congresswoman.
That's us. Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the reasons we got this mailer. It's because it's our, I'm sure it's sent very in a very concentrated way to people in those 27 districts so that you'll look to see if your congressperson. Oh, look, it's our congressperson. But I wondered about that. How do you feel about next month, our $5 going to the DCCC? You think that's a good investment or do you think something some other way?
You know what? I'm willing to risk $5. On the DCCC,
Hakeem Jeffries
being enough of a changed institution, unless we get, you know, 20 angry letters from 20 angry listeners telling us, here's what you don't understand about the DCCC. Then, okay, cool. You can persuade us. We are very persuaded.
Well, and, you know, Nikki Budzinski emails and texts me 3 times a day as well. So,
she does.
You know, we can.
You two are tight. Yeah.
Not in any specific way, but. I do think I'm on a list for J.B. Pritzker because I get invited to, you know, I've been invited to the $250 a plate Democratic state fundraiser in Chicago.
Yeah. You know what?
And I think
when you
know me and you don't know me at the same time.
When you invite me to the $4 a plate Charlie Parker pancake.
Yeah, pancake. Exactly.
I might be tempted, but that's about the limit of our budget.
But that restaurant is where... presidential candidate Mitt Romney was breakfasted. So
he was.
I don't think J.B. Pritzker is going to go there.
I don't know. I would if I were him.
Yeah,
he's beloved.
There you go.
And his mansion's right down the street.
Well, let's do a news roundup. The President Bidening continues.
Mm-hmm.
President Biden condemned Hamas's attack on Israel, saying this is terrorism and that Israel has a right to respond to this act of sheer evil. Comparing Hamas to the terrorist group ISIS, Biden said, "Our hearts may be broken, but our resolve is clear. We'll make sure the Jewish and democratic state of Israel can defend itself today, tomorrow, as we always have," promising ammunition and other assistance. He also talked about the rules of war. Biden said he has known Netanyahu for over 40 years. Again, this is what you were talking about, Driftglass.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up the phone, you know who Joe Biden is around the world. And it is such a relief to have this experience in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
I've known Netanyahu for over 40 years. He described his relationship with Netanyahu as, quote, very frank. Mm-hmm. I hope he said, listen, you corrupt fuckwad. I'm sorry what happened. I hope he had nothing to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Our intelligence agencies will be looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I hope that's what he said, but very frank. And then he said, quote, I know him well.
Yep.
And the one thing that I did say, that it is really important that Israel, with all the anger and frustration and just, I don't know how to explain it, that exists, is that they operate by the rules of war. The rules of war, and there are rules yeah. of war,
mm-hmm.
he said as he hosted Jewish leaders
mm-hmm.
at the White House.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, this attack that Hamas did was not engaging by the rules of war.
No. And
he warned Netanyahu right there. Mm-hmm. Don't violate the Geneva Conventions. But he also told the whole world, and particularly the world surrounding Israel, don't try to take advantage of this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of resources that are heading or already in the region. The largest aircraft mm-hmm. carrier group, yeah, I think, is right. out there. The Gerald Ford, a few others. I'm not an expert, consultant expert, if you want information. I am just, again, very happy that President Biden is president of the United States and not Donald fucking Trump. Because you know what? Donald Trump is back to his happy birther place.
Happy birther!
We were going to do it, play a clip, but it might be a little triggering because he is out of his tree and he's just
I won't listen to him. I won't.
He's off the leash now. He's the clown is out of the box completely. So he was ranting about the attack on Israel being Joe Biden's fault because, you know, Biden has a boss. He has a boss, and that boss's name is Barack Hussein Obama. And he kept saying Hussein Obama over and over and over again. And all the meatheads and puppets in the audience went, oh, I love that. Oh, he's so great. And then he repeated that Hezbollah is very smart, you know, very smart, very smart. And I am not surprised. I am deeply saddened that somewhere like 40% of this country still believe this guy should be president.
Driftglass, breaking news, our governor has written a response to Donald Trump.
Really?
Yes, and I would like to read it.
All right, this is not prepared, so
no.
Hit me.
J.B. Pritzker released the following statement. No true friend of Israel, the Jewish people, or of peace would praise Hezbollah just days after what President Biden and Jewish leaders have called the deadliest day for Jews since the Holocaust. Right now is the time to stand with Israel as they confront unimaginable loss and the ongoing threat from terrorists seeking to harm their people. Donald Trump's comments are disgusting, dangerous, and underscore a simple fact. He is unfit to lead our country and would make the United States and our allies around the world less safe.
Well, that's my governor.
Yep. Republicans tried kind of, sort of, to nominate Steve Scalise to be the next speaker. He insisted he had enough votes.
They tried so hard.
But then the House recessed without voting. And although a majority of the 221 Republicans kind of sort of nominated Scalise for speaker in a, secret ballot.
Yeah.
Too many Republicans walked out the door and said they still plan to vote for Kevin McCarthy or my dog or
Donald
Jim
Trump.
Jordan or Donald Trump, which makes it unlikely that Scalise can win the 217 votes he needs on the House floor to win the speakership. I've heard rumors since we started recording that Scalise is actually dropping out of the race. It's a mess, Driftglass.
Yeah. I saw the same report, and it was breaking news from Newsmax. I went, oh, that's funny. That's a funny thing. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm sure there's a lot of people in the Republican House who are highly dependent on the Newsmax audience and would happily blab to them all kinds of crazy shit. So it's not impossible. But what this means, however, is that the House will remain without a speaker because Republicans are holding out and blocking and nobody knows who the speaker is going to be. So no vote scheduled on Thursday because there's the House Majority Leader has no path to securing the speakership. So today, the House convened and went into recess in under 3 minutes. Again, for the second day in a goddamn row. Because, and if they were capable of shame, if six moderate, of these moderate, these Rodney Davis Republicans, if one hears so much about and never actually sees in the daytime, would just take whatever shred is left of their conscience and walk across the aisle and say, look, here's the deal. We have some demands. We have some things we want. If you can accommodate us, we will vote for Hakeem Jeffries. And maybe that's the end of our career. Maybe it's not. Maybe you lay off us in the primary. Maybe you don't. But we cannot go on like this. And my
After a little bit with Rachel Bitticoffer today, because she said, pick a swing state Republican. Just pick them and go to Hakeem Jeffries and say, look, we're going to pick this, you know, guy in a flip district to play it out till November.
Right.
And please vote for him. And the eight or the five or whoever they are that wanted might be reachable. Just say, look, we're going to put up this guy. Please vote for him. Let's get to 217 so we can get help to Israel. We can get some border security. We can get some money to Ukraine and make a deal.
Right.
And I just said back to her on Twitter, to Rachel Bitticoffer, name names, because these House members are not smart enough to figure out who you're talking about.
Right. I'm not either. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Name one who would have the skill. And then what? You're a traitor to the Republican House caucus. They're never going to vote with you again. The government shuts down in 74 days or 41 days or whatever it is. 37, I think it is.
And how fast does the Republican Party, who now have that one vote rule.
Yeah. You haven't changed that yet.
Put up a motion to vacate the person that we just broke our backs to elect.
Right. Right. And then Kevin McCarthy goes on the Sunday shows and says it's all Democrats' fault.
Yeah. No.
Again.
It's Illinois gerrymandering. I keep telling you, Bruce.
It's pushing all these Republicans too far to the right.
They don't want to go, but what choice do they have?
I can't enjoy my Catholic fish fry without hearing about Democrats mapping us into oblivion. Media Matters reports that the Trump Doral event with Eric Trump will feature a Hitler-promoting anti-Semite who killed someone. I wonder if he was gerrymandered.
Yeah, you know. We forced him into
killing someone.
What Democrat forced him to be this way?
This way.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Trump has responded to reports of like-minded racists by threatening to sue MSNBC host Rachel Maddow for reporting on the issue.
Yeah, you know, the litigious.
Why are you reporting that I'm at a Hitler-promoting anti-Semite speech from a guy who killed someone?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sue you.
I'm going to sue you just like my daddy. And you're going to lose in court just like your daddy. But you know what? Discovery with Ewick might be a ball. It might be a pay-per-view. Federal prosecutors have charged George Santos, or whatever name he's operating under these days, with 10 additional counts in a superseding indictment accusing him of stealing the identities of donors and then fraudulently charging their credit cards to spend thousands of dollars that he basically stole from them. George Santos immediately reacted by letting his colleagues know that his vote for House Speaker was now up for sale to anyone who would save his corrupt ass.
Man.
Yep.
And did you see where Fetterman is now calling for Menendez to just be ejected from the Senate?
Yeah, grab him by the scruff of the neck.
Because he's a foreign agent.
Yeah.
We just can't have him in the Senate. And so out he goes.
Trudeau out the window.
Yeah. But here's George Santos saying, yeah, I'll vote for House Speaker for anyone who won't eject me.
Uh-huh. Yes.
All right. The President Biden's administration plans to ask Congress to approve a funding package for Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and U.S. border security. Lawmakers in both parties have pledged to send funding to Israel, but additional help for Ukraine will likely come down to a far-right group of conservatives in the House, despite bipartisan support in both chambers. Yeah.
And speaking of gerrymandering and us bad Democrats being bad, bad people, North Carolina Republicans overrode the Democratic governor's veto of two election bills and enacted vote counting restrictions and weakened the governor's ability to oversee elections.
The radical right majority on the Supreme Court is predicted to side with the South Carolina Republican Party in the racial gerrymandering case.
And just across the border from Illinois, Wisconsin's Republican Assembly Leader Robin Voss is refusing to back down from possibly impeaching the newly elected liberal state Supreme Court justice over her refusal to step aside in a redistricting case.
Yeah, he's looking worse and worse and worse. Our colleague Capper at Crooks and Liars writes about this. Mm-hmm. And Voss is just looking like an idiot more and more every day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this Supreme Court justice was elected in a very important special election that everybody paid attention to.
Uh-huh.
From the Tallahassee Democrat, civil rights leaders and advocacy groups join defense of Florida woman accused of voter fraud. 69-year-old Marsha Irvin held up the voter registration card the state gave her and arrested her for. Police knocked on her door just before 3 a.m. and arrested her for alleged voter fraud. Was she a flight risk for voter fraud? Fuck you.
Yeah.
3 a.m.?
Mm-hmm.
You do that for armed drug dealers.
Uh-huh.
Not 69-year-old voters.
Or Paul Manafort. Okay. There's
or
an exception.
Paul, if you want to search your house for, you know, Hunter Biden discs and laptops, sure. If you're looking for Rudy Giuliani and where he's hidden money.
Yeah.
Knock at 3 a.m. But they arrested her at 3 in the morning for alleged voter fraud.
Mm-hmm.
That's a choice they made. That's a choice the DeSantis administration made. DeSantis and his goons have arrested multiple people around the state following eligibility confusion. Most of them, like Irvin, are Black. Of course they are.
You can't see it because this is audio only, but this is my shocked face, my utterly, utterly shocked face.
Bigot. All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties are KK and Stitch, who belong to the science fiction people from Tacoma, who had coffee with us this past weekend. KK desperately wants to be an outdoor kitty and escapes once or twice a month. Stitch escapes also every once in a while. They live on a busy road, however. So they haven't managed to convince their humans to let them be outdoor cats yet.
Yeah.
The picture is of both of them sacked out on the bed because being a pretend outdoor kitty is exhausting.
Full-time job. Seriously.
And of course, KK and Stitch eat freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your pets will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured.
Freshly poured, oh my lord, it's freshly poured.
And you can visit these gorgeous, gorgeous cats, Kiki and Stitch, at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us. We take all kinds of pets at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us, and we will read your email. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Go UAW. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our full-time job. We love doing this podcast. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please get someone else to listen to, and thank you for all your support. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the internet kitties are relieved to know that Freshly Poured has no intention of making a pumpkin spice line of cat food.
Hey, let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
A Professional Left podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2023 DGBG Productions.